We start with a very brief roundup of the week's top stories from Physicians First Watch. Those are read by Amy Herman, First Watch's editor. And then we chat with Dr. Edward Marcantonio about his editorial on vitamin H, that is, using haloperidol or other antipsychotics to treat delirium in hospitalized patients. Here's the news.
Hi, everyone. Our first story. A study finds that the more time teens spend on social media, the more likely they are to later experience depression or anxiety. This held true even when researchers took into account the teen's prior depression and anxiety. Next, the FDA cautioned people to avoid vaping products that contain THC or vitamin E acetate. The agency found significant amounts of vitamin E acetate in most of the THC vaping products tested from people who've become ill with severe lung disease. However, not all of the people who've become sick have used these products. In related news, in a new study, 1 in 3 adults who use e-cigarettes said flavored e-liquids like fruit and coffee were a major reason they started vaping, and these people were more likely to report being addicted to vaping. At the same time, President Trump announced plans to ban sales of flavored e-cigarettes across the country. Next up, UK researchers are urging clinicians and others to be alert for a new strain of strep that's emerged amid an outbreak of scarlet fever, which began there in 2014. The strain, referred to as M1 UK, produces more strep toxin than other strains, meaning it's more likely to cause invasive infections. And finally, a randomized trial from China finds that treating H. pylori for at least 2 weeks and giving people vitamins or garlic oil for about 7 years may help prevent gastric cancer mortality decades later. And that's it for this week. Stick around for Joe Elia's latest clinical conversation.
Welcome to another clinical conversation. This time we've got Edward Marcantonio, whose editorial in the Annals of Internal Medicine on managing delirium in hospitalized patients invites us to heed current evidence and stop using antipsychotics to treat it. Could this be the end of vitamin H or haloperidol use in these patients? Dr. Marcantonio is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, and he is also director of research in the Division of General Medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Dr. Marcantonio.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I appreciate it.
Your editorial comments on a systematic review in the Annals. It's on the therapeutic use of haloperidol and second-generation antipsychotics for delirium in hospitalized patients. So what did that review conclude?
This was really important work, and it was commissioned by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And what the reviewers did was to systematically review the literature for both randomized trials and informative observational studies looking at antipsychotics for the treatment of delirium. And this was in broad settings. It included intensive care units, geriatrics wards, regular internal medicine wards, surgery, and even palliative care. And they identified, in the end, 16 articles that were informative towards this question. And the other thing that I point out in my editorial is the outcome to look at for delirium treatment is not obvious. For delirium prevention, it would be the incidence of delirium. But for treatment, it could be the duration of delirium, the severity of delirium, or a variety of other outcomes. So they actually pulled together a panel to figure out which outcomes were most important. But ultimately, what they found was really not much difference in any of the outcomes between the people who were treated with antipsychotics and those that were treated with placebo. They also didn't find many differences between those treated with first generation or Haldol versus second generation antipsychotics, or among the different antipsychotics themselves. So really no real therapeutic benefit of any of these drugs towards any of the identified important outcomes of delirium.
And you mentioned at the beginning of your editorial that some 30 years ago when you were a resident, the word was, well, you know, if you have somebody in delirium, especially an older patient, then you might want to use vitamin H, as it's called, or haloperidol. Is that still in wide use, do you know?
Well, I hope not. I hope we've made some advances. But I think that we've actually done some research separate from this that has shown that the use of haloperidol is going down, but the use of many of the second generation antipsychotics is going up. So if it's not vitamin H, it may be one of the other alternatives that's being used. But I do think that use of one of these agents for delirium is still quite common in clinical practice.
You've spent much of your professional life studying the outcomes of elderly patients. Why is delirium so common among them when they're hospitalized, or is that recognition of their delirium just the result of being under careful clinical observation?
Well, in fact, most of the cases of delirium are not recognized. Over 50% of cases kind of fly under the radar screen of clinical care, and these tend to be the technical term is hypoactive delirium or quiet delirium. Mm-hmm. These are patients who are not agitated, who don't really cause any problems. In fact, they don't really ask for anything. They just sit there and don't do much, mm-hmm. including not eating and not getting out of bed and so forth. So there's a huge group that are like that, and then there's a smaller group that does become agitated that may become recognized and treated. But the way I think about delirium is as acute brain failure, which is that the brain is just being overwhelmed by the situation, and that could be the result of the acute illness that caused the hospitalization or medications or the hospital environment or a combination of all of those things. And it has been shown to be a powerful predictor of poor outcomes for these patients.
Delirium seems like a very complex condition with lots of manifestations. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes. I would say it can range anywhere from the stuporous patient who's barely above the level of coma all the way to a wildly agitated, hallucinating, psychotic patient that's totally disrupting the ward. But realizing for every one of the latter case, there's probably 10 of the former cases that may or may not be recognized.
And so once you spot it, barring the use of an antipsychotic, how else do you treat it?
Yeah, so I almost prefer the word management to treatment.
Okay.
Because treatment almost implies that you can pull out a magic bullet from the armamentarium and administer it, and it will cure the condition. And I really don't think delirium is that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do is to say that every person who is identified, the clinician should run through a checklist, and we've developed a mnemonic, delirium, which identifies some of the most common things to look for. You want me to run through that?
No need to, because I came across that mnemonic in your clinical practice article a couple of years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine. And I will put a link to that in this podcast. And
okay.
And people hearing us now know that they can go there and get it. And it is a very good table of directions on how to identify and what you do. And I was going to ask you, you know, given that the existence of that article, you mentioned in it haloperidol back then as a kind of last resort for persistent symptoms. Would you change your recommendation in the light of this new analysis that your editorial covered?
So, even back in 2 years ago when I wrote that article, I included it with some misgivings because I really don't think that these are good drugs to use in delirium. On the other hand, I know that they are or at least until this recent evidence, were still being frequently used. So I felt like providing some guidance for the clinician as to starting doses and how to administer the drugs would be useful. But maybe if I do a similar article in the future, I will not include that, because I do think that the evidence is swinging more and more towards the lack of efficacy of these drugs for treatment.
Yes, you mentioned in your editorial that it's probably time to stop using these things. It was a rather definitive statement. You think that that review was practice changing in its implications, correct?
I do, although I did provide one caveat, and that is that I do think there is a small subset of patients who have just behavioral symptoms that are of danger to themselves or others. Maybe they have in life-saving devices that they're trying to remove from themselves, or they're lashing out at the staff. And I do think there's a lot of role for a training in behavioral de-escalation that can manage many of those situations, but there will be still a subset of those where the use of these drugs may be necessary. The key is that the outcome is not delirium. You're not really trying to treat or cure the delirium, but really the outcome is the behavior that indicates the use of these drugs, and that should be what's tracked as the efficacy of the drugs. And once that behavioral outcome is achieved, then the drug should be stopped as soon as possible. So that's still a possibility, and really figuring out how to optimize use of these drugs in that situation is still an area for active research. But for the broad treatment of delirium with antipsychotics, I do think that the review is practice changing and that we should stop using it for that indication.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Mark Antonio, for taking the time to discuss this editorial with me today.
Absolutely.
That was our 233rd Clinical Conversation. The whole searchable collection is available free at podcasts.jwatch.org. Let us know how we can improve these chats. Email me, jelia@nejm.org. We come to you from NEJM Journal Watch. The executive producer is Kristen Kelly. I'm Joe Elia. Thanks for listening.